Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
First drink of the night right there, Craig. That's right there. That's the first drink. I got a little Buffalo Trace bourbon. And I'm just gonna wing it tonight on Bucks in the Basement with my Buffalo Trace. What do you think about that?
Well, seeing that it looks like the Bucks are kind of winging it right now, so it's probably not a bad approach to go with. I mean, I know Ben Cherington has his I joke, I kid. I mean, I feel like he still has a plan, but at this point in time, I'm still waiting for that first major league signing. We got another minor league signing, Chasen Shreve, a left-handed reliever who throws a mean splitter, I do believe, is his number one pitch. Not super exciting. I mean, he's 30 years old. He's a veteran. He's competition. That's what he is in all of this. There's nothing more to this. Unfortunately for the Pirates, there's been no major league signings. So when these minor league signings happen, they get blown up everywhere because somebody's finally got something to write about. Somebody's finally got something to talk about. But for the most part, other teams are doing these like on a smaller level, I guess it would be, but they have other things going on around them that like MLB Trade Rumors puts like five or six of them, you know, into one story. Whereas the Pirates, it's for some reason, it's like, okay, we're going to sign this guy to a minor league contract. And then 2 weeks later, we're going to sign this guy to a minor league contract. So, but if they did them all on the same day, this would kind of come out as like a non-story. But Chris, it turns into a bigger deal. And then, you know, people get into battles on Twitter and stuff. I stay out of that now. But I watch it and I'm just like, this is nothing to argue about. This is nothing to get overly excited about. It's a nice little move. He turns into a nice depth piece in the bullpen. Great. If he doesn't make the team, okay.
I think it's cute how much time you just spent on somebody that you didn't really care about. But it's good for you. I'm proud of it. Look, I'm looking at this team right now, and I'm thinking to myself, nobody really cost a lot of money except for Polanco. And Polanco's not in the plans. So as all these guys approach spring training, they are stupid. If they are not thinking to themselves that I am promised nothing, I'm not going to stay on this team because a general manager is tied to me. I'm not going to stay on this team because the team has invested so much money in me, they're going to will me to be a part of this team. I'm not going to be on this team because the marketing department finds me to be an incredible marketing tool. So even if I slump in spring training, I'm going to make this team. No, they're going to give a longer leash to Mitch Keller and to Brian Reynolds and to Cabrian Hayes, and they really don't care about any of the rest of you. Like, at this point, if you don't make the team, you don't make the team. And I find this to be fascinating because we are watching a team that is going to grow from the ground up. And so this is different from most spring trainings. Who cares if they're bringing up, like, Nick Gonzalez is going to be showing up at spring training. He's not going to make the team. There's no way they're starting the clock on this kid. He's going to be in single A. Like, that's what he is. But they want to get a look at him. So why not? Minor league camp's going to start late. So they want to get their guys going. That makes sense. But, you know, I find it fascinating here is that no player should believe they have a set spot on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like, I saw Cole Tucker in an interview recently. And, you know, he's joking around on MLB Network. Cole, buddy, booby, you better play well. There's no guarantee that you will be on this team in 2 years if you don't. This guy ain't tied to you. So that's what I find to be really amazing about this whole thing, is that Ben Cherington now is going to sit here with everything ripped down to the studs and make actual evaluations over, well, okay, well, is this guy good? Can this guy play? Is this guy a future piece? Is this a guy that we flip? Is this a guy that, why am I wasting my time? Send this guy back to the minors. So that's what's going to be really fun about this. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, given the young guys just a taste of, like, a little bit of big league action, Gary wrote about that, you know, having Quinn Priester throw, you know, a ball to Vlad Jr. or something and seeing what he does with it and maybe being humbled a little bit that, you know what, you're getting up on all these prospect lists, but you hang that curveball a little bit too high and Vlad's going to, you know, just trot around the bases for fun. And that's another little piece of that I kind of like. And I think they split this non-roster invitee list up like pretty well. I mean, there's some guys that it's like, you know what, you're a depth piece and you're AAA, or you know what, you might be gone and DFA'd before the season even starts. And some young guys, like we talked about, like you said, Gonzalez, I mentioned Priester, Liova Peguero, you know, these guys, Cal Mitchell, Mason Martin, that really, it's just going to kind of give them a taste of, you know, this is what, when you get to the major league roster, this is what it's going to be like. And I think that's a good thing for them. And also, like you said, Chris, I think that I saw that the minor league spring training is not going to start until after the big league spring training, quote unquote, breaks. And that's like looking around like March 30th, whereas they would have usually came in, you know, just a couple weeks after and been able to.
They'd have been on another field. It would have been one of those things where hey, he's going to minor league spring training. You're over on that field now, kid. Just show up there tomorrow. And so I think you're going to have guys that they won't cut down rosters as quickly as they do. Like, they're not going to sit there and tell, you know, one of their young players, like, yeah, normally you would have had 2 weeks and then we would send you over to the other field, but hang out around this team for the entire month. You're not really probably going to play very much, but you could show up for practice and workouts and then just go kind of sit in the stands and watch. That's kind of what's going to happen. I don't think you'll see massive cutdowns and guys get moved over as quickly as they normally would move them over. Roster Resource FanGraphs projections. FanGraphs is actually the company, and the guy who started Roster Resource has been on this show before, Jason Martinez, and he breaks down what the projected, based upon how these guys play, where they slot, you know, how much contribution they give to a team, projected starting lineup for the Pirates, and then the guys on the bench. It's going to be really interesting. One of the great battles, I think, is going to be shortstop. Because, again, I don't think anybody's assured of anything. He's got Newman as the starting shortstop right now over Tucker. And you've got other infielders that might want that spot. He's got Phillip Evans on the bench, but Phillip Evans could very easily find his way into the starting lineup if he starts hitting the way that he was hitting, well, you know, at the beginning of the year. Last year, when he was giving you that burst where you're getting excited about him. This will be really kind of fun to see who's going to play their way on. If I'm a player on the Pirates right now, you hope that the players on the Pirates are filled with this belief that this is their shot. If they come in and they're prepared and they give it their all and they show their stuff, they're going to be in Major League Baseball for a while, whether it be just through the rebuild until they're eventually replaced or through the rebuild and then they become a journeyman and bounce around, but they're not going to be in for a couple years and gone. Because they can really latch on with this team for a while. A guy like Anthony Alford, who it didn't work out for at his first stop, has the opportunity to become the everyday center fielder for this team, and the Pirates are going to give him that opportunity. So this is going to be kind of fun. I know it's no fun. It's no fun at the beginning of a rebuild. It's going to suck. Pirates are going to lose a ton of games. It's no fun. The good news is the fact that after you've been stuck inside your homes and dealing with this pandemic, you're going to want to go out to the ballpark even if they suck. I'm so excited to get outside and do things that feel normal. So, you know, for the Pirates, it's the greatest year that they could have possibly started a rebuild. Because fans are going to be like, I don't care. I don't care if it's terrible. I want to go outside. I want to go to a ball game again, you know? And everybody else lowered their payroll. So it's not like they're like, you know, they don't look too bad. Because everybody, I mean, most teams stood pat or added $10 million, and a lot of them went backwards. Even the big boys went backwards this year in their payroll. So the Pirates are in an interesting situation here, and it's a great way to start off a rebuild.
Yeah, and I could see where, like, you know, Charrington and Shelton, they just want to get their eyes on these guys because they only got to see them for 60 games, see how they're starting to work out in spring training, which it's the same thing that happened last year is, you know, we didn't sign a center fielder. And, I mean, we got Jerod Dyson, but he basically looked at the roster and said, I don't know if I can trust any of these guys in center field, you know, for 162 games. we got to go out and get somebody. So they may say, you know what, let's see how many of these pitchers work out. I mean, you're bringing Clay Holmes back. You got to see what he looks like. Chase DeYoung's getting brought in. Shea Spitzbarth from the Rule 5 draft. I mean, I think he wants to see, like, okay, what are these guys made of? And other things is that some of the better teams, they're not going to have room for that. You know, they have guys fighting for, like, the fourth and fifth spot on, you know, in the rotation that might kind of like slide in there at like a solid four for the Pirates if they're dropped off at some point, you know, before the season starts. So, I mean, I can kind of see why he's doing that, because he also wants to see what these young guys are, the guys he has control of. And other than that, it may work itself out at some point in time. If there's a trade, if somebody gets injured, then you might have to start making some moves. But I don't think there's anything that is so pressing. I know we talked about it last week, Chris, and I don't know if you want to throw out another name for a guy not to be signed by the Pirates. You know, King Felix, you're like, you throw his name out, and I swear to God, like 2 seconds later,
the Orioles signed him.
Yeah, he gets signed.
And the Orioles are what? A team that has a bunch of young players that they're hoping are going to turn around, and they're coming out of a rebuild.
They did exactly
what I said. That's what you do. You go get a guy like that. You bring him in there. He was a minor league deal, if I'm not mistaken. And he's gonna come in. He's probably gonna make the team. And if he's got anything, he's gonna sit in that rotation and be somebody for the young guys to bounce things off of and to learn from. Just watching how he prepares for games. And that's a missed opportunity, I think. Look, the Pittsburgh Pirates, in total, their entire 26-man roster cost 1 year of Trevor Bauer. That's it. Trevor Bauer is making just as much money as the entirety of the Pirates roster in 2021. It's amazing, but it's true. Estimated $43 million payroll for the Pirates this year. And the only guys with guaranteed contracts coming into the season are Polanco and Felipe Vasquez. They got to give him $500,000. And then they can club option out of both these guys. So there's nothing on the books. There's nobody guaranteed a thing in 2022. So as I said before, this team can do anything they want to. This is one of those rare instances where a team has the incredible flexibility to just pick the best players. If a guy's out there playing and he's not as good as the guy on the bench, they don't have any explanation whatsoever for it. So you're not going to run into that. And I think it's going to be really kind of cool. Are you a CFO, HR professional, or owner of a company, big or small, and you're tired of the typical health insurance premium increases each and every year? Out of control premiums with no end in sight. Well, now there is the Elite Benefits Formula. This process has saved employers and their employees thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars each year. These strategies are avoided by most insurance professionals, and the insurance companies definitely do not want you to know about them. But Elite Benefits of America is ready to help you. Just about all employers in the Chicagoland area can now take advantage of some or all of these strategies and start saving money. Butch Zimar from Elite Benefits of America wants you to reach out to him today. Visit elitebenefits.net or call 708-535-3006. Let's talk about the baseball, because you were telling me that you wanted to. You're concerned about the baseball. And I want to know why you're concerned about the baseball, because I did a quick glance at what they're doing with the major league, with the baseballs this year, and it made sense to me. But you go ahead and break this down for everybody.
No, so basically, I mean, I guess there's like a component of the core of the baseball that you can wind the stuff around it tighter towards the center, and it makes the ball smaller. It could make it lighter. It could make it, you know, have less drag. And they're trying to mess around with it to get more balls in play. I don't know how that plays with the strikeouts. I mean, I've watched a ton of crap on it. I've seen a bunch of articles that, I mean, it does have effects on pitchers, but it kind of seemed like the big thing they were just trying to do is to cut down on maybe that 5% of fly balls that really should not be home runs.
Yeah, but it's going to do more than that, because I was also reading in the Rosenthal article that 33% reduction. That's what the Korean Baseball League saw when they did a similar thing. Now, it's not the exact same thing. Major League Baseball is doing something different from what the Korean League did with the baseballs, but it's intended to have a similar effect. Like, I believe the Korean League also added weight to the ball, and Major League Baseball has been testing this, and they're actually going to make the ball slightly lighter. So their intention is to just kill the weird fluctuation of home runs, where one year you have this incredible fluctuation of home runs where there's a ton of them, and the next year it goes down again. And it makes people question the game as to, are the balls juiced? Because they're handmade. Rawlings is owned by Major League Baseball, and they make the baseballs by hand, so there's flaws. And nobody's ever been able to explain how exactly is a baseball made. Are these things similar from game to game, week to week, year to year? So any kind of regulation is good regulation as long as it doesn't make a massive change to the game. Like, if it makes a massive change to the game, if we never see anybody else hit 50 home runs again, it's a mistake. It's going to keep records in the record books and nobody will have a chance to break them. But on the other hand, if it takes away anything that makes the game even on a playing field is a good thing. Like, I was looking at how many teams are using humidors this season.
Oh, they said it going up to 10 or something. They five more teams added.
What do the Red Sox need a humidor for? They're in a coastal town that's got nothing but fog. It's already humid. Why do the Red Sox get to use a humidor? How is that? I'm sorry. I thought the whole idea of the humidor was to deal with like places with weird altitudes and especially desert weather. But now in a humid coastal town of Boston, Massachusetts. And I've been to Boston. It's not a dry place. It's actually very humid. And they're going to put the balls in a humidor. And that's okay. And I don't understand it at all. So these are the things that need to stop. So if they come up with a regulated baseball and then that allows them to knock off this humidor crap, then fine. Then I'm fine with it. Because that's insane. I understood the humidor because we're trying to counteract what's going on with the Diamondbacks. I have a real problem with the fact that Boston's got one this year. I don't know what they need one for. What is different about the air quality in Boston than, say, Cincinnati or Chicago? Somebody tell me.
I don't know, man. And that's the thing is that, and if all the home runs start going down in Boston, like, what do other teams, like, are you just going to have every team have a humidor?
Right. Is everything going off the top of the Green Monster and nobody ever hits one over the top of it again because the ball's heavier? Like, I don't understand the humidor there. Maybe there's somebody who's smarter than me who understands trajectories and why a humidor would make sense there. But literally, you go to Boston, you eat crab cakes, you can smell the salt air. There's humidity around there every single day of the year. A humidor makes no sense to me. There's no desert there, and there's no, and in fact, it's probably more humid in Boston than in the Midwest. It's weird, isn't it? Like, when I tell you Boston's getting a humidor, that's weirder to me than the fact that they're going to have a uniform way that they make the baseballs. That's what bothered me the most. I was like, huh?
Tell you the truth, Chris, that is something that you would pick out, but it actually makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. Like, I was trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, I'm doing the percentages, I'm doing, you know, what's going to happen here, and they're, you know, trying to quote-unquote deaden the ball and liven the ball when actually they're just trying to regulate the ball, which would possibly decrease the home runs that have happened over the past few years in the quote unquote live ball, but they're not trying to take it back to the whole way to the dead ball era. They're just trying to regulate it. And Chris goes, why the heck is Boston getting a humidor? And I'm like, you know what? He's onto something. There's the tricky thing right there is why did Boston get a humidor and Pittsburgh didn't?
Exactly.
We had a humidor.
Why does Boston get a humidor? And Pittsburgh doesn't. Why is it that the rivers cause enough humidity, but the ocean does not? These are the questions that I have. I want to understand this. And these, you know, that's the thing. Everybody else reads the title, the byline, and skims through the story. I look in there and go, what are they burying? Like, people bury the lead sometimes. You know, they release news on busy news days in the hopes that they end up on the third page. Like, have you ever heard about the USS Indianapolis? Everybody knows that one, right? The whole idea that that was the ship in World War II that brought over the nuclear bombs, or the atom bombs, and then it sunk on the way back, and the sharks ate all of them, except for like 300 of them, and that's what Quint's talking about in the movie Jaws. But you know what people don't understand is that happened, and nobody reported on it. The War Department held it back and released it on the exact same day as the signing of the armistice between the U.S. and the Japanese. It had happened months earlier. They released it then so it wouldn't be on the front page because it was a total disaster. So when I see this story, I go, isn't it interesting? They slipped in that Boston gets a humidor this year and you really have to look for it. But that's what they did. And that's what I caught out of the story.
That's, you know what, Chris, it was hiding in plain sight is what it was. It was hiding in plain sight from all of us, and you brought it out. And
I want
you
answers. I want the truth. That's what I want. I want to know why Boston gets a humidor.
Okay, Chan Bloom, why did you guys, did you get like a humidor thrown in a deal or something?
Yeah.
Like, where did you get this humidor from?
How did they get this humidor? First of all, Boston, didn't they get caught? Didn't they have to get rid of their manager because of his link to cheating? And now they bring the manager back a year later and they get a humidor? Like, what's going on in Boston? And how do I get my team to get those kind of breaks? That's what I want to know. How do I get that for my team? That's whatever. But you got to see it. You got to pay attention to it. You got to look at it. And you got to be aware of it. And somebody needs to ask the question. You know, Major League Baseball has been hell in a handbasket ever since that they got rid of like a commissioner that didn't answer to the owners. You know, remember back in the good old days when the commissioner was for life? And he wasn't associated with any ownership groups, and they couldn't do anything to him. You know, back before steroids. Because remember, steroids happened with C-League. It didn't happen with a real commissioner, right? I mean, but now, yes. Now all of a sudden, like, we got this new system, and baseball's got all kinds of problems and cheating scandals and garbage can things. Kind of like the last time baseball didn't have a commissioner that was for life. When was that? Oh, that's why they had a commissioner! That was for life and away from the owners. Because after the 1919 Black Sox scandal, they went and got Kennesaw Mountain Landis. And then everything was fine. You didn't hear anybody cheating scandals. You didn't have anybody gambling on games. You didn't have humidors. You didn't have any of this stuff. Weird baseballs and steroids and everything else like that. And then all of a sudden, Bud Selig, an owner, gets to become a commissioner. And everything went to frickin' hell. You know, that's the real story here. Now I'm on a rant and I'm screaming about commissioners. But somebody needs to ask that question as to why Major League Baseball has gone off the deep end with some of these ridiculous policies. And it seems like they're constantly trying to change the game. The game was beautiful and nobody needed to touch it when they didn't have a commissioner that worked for the owners. Instead, he was for life and didn't have to answer to him. We had decade upon decade upon decade of no problems whatsoever.
Well, speaking of changing the game, Chris, I just saw this come across my phone, and I just had to mention it. The health and safety protocols have been agreed upon
for what? Spring training?
For Major League Baseball for this season between the unions and between MLBPA and Major League Baseball, they will once again have the 7-inning doubleheaders. And starting on second base in extra innings,
I'm fine.
Both sides in agreement from the get-go. Health and safety protocol. I think it's a
I think both sides want it. To be honest with you, I think both sides want it, and that's why they're using this health and safety thing. When the CBA comes out after it expires at the end of this year, the next CBA will have that in there. You'll have 7-inning doubleheaders, and because the players get paid if it's 7 or 9, and the owners will, you know. Here's the one thing. If they do 7 innings when they do a doubleheader, the real question is going to be, are the owners still going to empty out the stadium and bring in the other tickets for just 7 innings? Because that will be a real issue with fans. So that'll be interesting to see whether or not that remains. But I do think that the runner on second base is something that's going to be here forever. Whether you like it or not, I think that they're going to keep it. I think that the players enjoy not having to worry about playing until 2 a.m. and then having to get up and play a day game.
Yeah.
And I think that Major League Baseball sees that their ratings go down as people go to sleep and people are leaving the ballpark. You've cut off beer sales. You can't reopen it. So you're not making any money anymore and everybody just wants to end the game. So they're going to keep that rule forever. Get used to it, whether you hate it or if you don't hate it. I personally like the purity of not having to do it. But I understand why they're doing it. They're going to keep it.
But the crazy part is, Chris, that they're not implementing the DH because the owners want the extended playoffs. Because the crazy part is one of the main things in the health and safety protocol last time was the DH.
Right, but now it's not part of the health and safety protocol. And because in the end, these two sides are going to be negotiating now for the rest of the year. They're in negotiations for the next CBA. They started negotiations for the next CBA when the pandemic hit. Negotiations began. We said it on the show. Negotiations began. Pandemic hit in March. Negotiations for the next CBA began. They began a year and a half early, but they began. And this has all been part of the extended negotiations and positioning to get ready for this. And all I want out of them is, no matter what, you better not take baseball away from me after I lost the majority of the season in 2020. And I think that they, in the back of their minds, I hope, that both sides understand you can't have another work stoppage. So this is, I think, why they're having these arguments now. And so I'm fine with them having these arguments now, because I want them to have a solution when the actual CBA opens up. If all their cards are already, if they're already showing some of their cards right now, that can only be good for hoping that they get this thing worked out so there's no stoppage and we start on time in 2022. That's my hope with this whole thing.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that, Chris. I mean, I hope that would be it as well. I mean, it's basically like, okay, here's what we want. We want a DH. We want extended playoffs. I think that the players are probably going to throw in something with a little bit of the control and arbitration at some point in time. But it's like, okay, here's the two things we can agree on. Let's just move forward with this. But we all know what the other side wants when, you know, things come to pass here in December.
I want to ask you a question, though, before we get out of here. I'm going to give you some names that are sure things for the Pirates roster. Okay, sure things that I think, like, they're actually going to be good. They're going to find a way to perform and be on this team now for several years, and they're part of your core. Brian Hayes is your third baseman of the future. I think Brian Reynolds rebounds and is in your outfield for a long time. And I also think that Mitch Keller is a big part of your team going forward. If you take those three guys out of the equation, is there anybody else that you sit there and think to yourself, I believe this player is going to show that they are a core piece moving forward on this team?
On the current roster?
On the current roster. On the projected 26-man. Not, you can't say Quinn Priester. I know you're in love with him. I know you're going to name your next child Quinn and your child after that Priester. Okay? And you can't pull out the guy that I just acquired in our fantasy league, in our Dynasty Fantasy League. I went out and got him.
Nick Gonzalez.
Because I knew that Nick Gonzalez would be a guy I could hold for a king's ransom from you when he gets good one day. So I'm just going to hide him in my minors for a couple of years. You can't use those guys. But on the projected 26-man roster, who do you think or wish or expect or hope for to be added with those three guys to be the core of the future? Or does anybody exist? Is there another guy? Or do you think nobody exists on this team right now that's part of that?
There's not too many names, Chris, that would really completely stick out to me. I want to see how JT Brubaker does this year. I think that JT Brubaker could be a solid number four or number five for your team going forward, or he could end up being one of those guys that kind of gets, you know, relegated to the bullpen. But I would say if there's any other person that's currently on this roster right now as it's constructed that I could see as a part of a core, but he wouldn't be as big of a piece of the pie as the three guys you mentioned. I still want to see how he does this year, but if I was forced to say a name, I would probably say JT Brubaker, and it was tough for me to even come up with that, and that's kind of sad because that basically means that the other 24 guys on the, or 23 guys on, you know, the roster, they don't move the needle for me a whole lot. And that's, I don't know. It's just sad.
I'm going to tell you two guys that I'm hopeful for. I'm hopeful that Colin Moran, even though he's 28 years old, is the wily veteran in a few years that builds on what he did last year. Another guy that I want to tell you who's a deep sleeper for me. He's out of options. He's got to make the team. He's already been waived once by the Pittsburgh Pirates. But here's a guy who, remember, was a first-round draft pick and said after he made it to the Pittsburgh Pirates that he was being forced to throw pitches that he wasn't good at and wanted to get back to the thing that made him a first round top 10 draft pick as a starting pitcher, and it's Carson Fulmer. I think Carson Fulmer is your big sleeper on this team, but he's going to have to show you something in spring training. If he makes this team, if he looks good, this is a guy that eventually could become a real pitcher for the Pirates. That's like one of those, like you bought a lottery ticket and you just happen to scratch it off and you won the $25,000. Like that's what he is. Okay. It might not happen. I'm calling him a dark horse. He's an outside candidate, but keep your eye on Carson Fulmer in spring.
Yeah. And that's not a bad call, Chris, because that's the other part of where we're talking about, like, you know, why we're not signing like a starting pitcher, why we're just like picking up these minor moves and stuff. I think a lot of the stuff, like I said, is going to have to be worked out in spring training, that there's a decent amount of guys that, you know, I mean, have been starters. I mean, we talk about, you know, Miguel Yajure, who actually came up as a starter and he got put in the bullpen for the Yankees last year. I think they want to see like who are the five, and you know what? We might have nine guys that could start, and it might not be a bunch of guys eating innings, and it might be a bunch of, you know, relief innings. It might be a bunch of spot starts. It might be, I'm not saying a full nine-man rotation, because that's just absolutely insanity, but it could be guys that could be easily moved in and out, that you're not really depending on, you know, that one guy to pitch like the big innings, but it's, and to eat up those innings, that it could be just a bunch of guys kind of like, I mean, it didn't work out real great, and people say that's kind of crappy, is almost like the Angels, where they didn't have a guy who had over so many innings pitched. I think we'll have, you know, maybe a couple of those guys, but you may not have three or four. You might have those top two guys that are eating a lot of innings, and then you have like seven other guys who are, you know, filling in as need be.
You know who's not going to be part of the core? The new acquisition. Chasen. I mean, do you think his mom and dad were having an argument in the delivery room and dad wanted to call him Charles and mom wanted to call him Jason and they just came up with Chasen and just called it a day? So weird.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change.